Hi, you're listening to Secrets for an Inspirational Life with me, your host, Mimi Novick. I'm so happy and thrilled to have you here with me. I have created this series for all of us so we can change our world together and live a more holistic and balanced life. Together, we will share lots of inspiring stories from all walks of life, speak with leading experts, enjoy healthy living ideas, explore music and subjects that inspire each other to always have hope. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate all of you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Secrets for an Inspirational Life. How are you all today? I hope that wherever you are in the world, there is something to be thankful for. And I think in life, there is always something to be thankful for. And we forget sometimes because we are only human after all. But gratitude is one of those things that I myself also don't do enough, because they say that when you are grateful for the things in your life, it is actually glimpsing a little bit of heaven. And especially when you are grateful for the people that are in your life and for the people that make a true difference in your life, it really is something divine. We are so honored in these times to be able to share with each other these precious moments, because life really does go by so quickly. And it is so important that those that we love and care about know how much they mean to us. Now, today, I'm absolutely delighted to welcome my guest, who is the very successful A. Russell Andrews. Russell is an Olivier Award-winning actor, director, and author with an expansive 30-year theatrical career. He is the founding member of the acclaimed Los Angeles-based stage company, Stagewalkers. Recognized for his contributions to the stage, he has received numerous awards. In addition to his theatrical success, he has made a notable impact in commercial and TV acting, appearing in hit series such as Insecure, Better Call Saul, Grey's Anatomy, Harry's Law, CSI Miami, Boston Legal, to name but a few. Additionally, he was chosen by Oscar-nominated director Diane Houston for the roles of Attorney Davis in Lifetime Network's Michael Jackson Searching for Neverland and Reverend Clinton Hines in TV1's critically acclaimed Runaway Island, which earned him Emmy consideration for Outstanding Lead Actor in a Limited Series or Movie. Other co-starring roles were in Arun K. Veer's multi-award-winning indie film Reset, The In-Laws with Michael Douglas and Albert Brooks, and The Punisher with John Travolta and Tom Jane. Russell also gives back to his community through his various humanitarian works. He actively engages in social activism, dedicating his time and service to organizations supporting the homeless community, including the Hollywood Food Coalition and the Giving Spirit. Russell recently marked his debut as a novelist with the release of his book, Shoes. And today, he shares his wonderful life journey. Welcome, dear Russell.
Thank you so much. I don't know if I can better that intro. I'm done. That was wonderful. Thank you so much.
Was it good enough for you, dear Russell?
Listen, I You know, we all speak of ourselves as much as we get an opportunity to, but it's funny to hear someone else say the things we think and or we'd like to say. You know, sometimes vanity, if not insecurity, keeps us from saying or saying too much. But that was simple. It was concise. And yeah, it's very humbling. So yeah, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Aww, and thank you. You know, thank you so much for joining me today. It's really an absolute pleasure to have you. And tell everybody, where are you?
I'm in Los Angeles at the time. I am. I've been here over 20 years, nearly 25. But I've lived all over New York and D.C. and Houston. Texas is my home. My birthplace is Texas, and off and on in London over a number of years. You know, chasing work, as it were. But yeah, based right now in Los Angeles.
Oh, how wonderful. I actually was telling some friends of mine that I've got you coming on today, and because obviously it's the evening where I am, and they were rather excited. They said, oh, you have this actor coming from Los Angeles. Oh, that's so exciting.
That is so nice. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so really, truly, it's an absolute pleasure. Now, Russell, you have done many acclaimed things, and you have and have had a very successful career. And you've done many things in life, I know. But let's go back to the beginning of all of this story. How did all of this begin? Where did it all begin?
The artistic part of my life, I have to say, was without question accidental. I was working at a prison in Texas. It was a maximum security. It was called the, or is called the Darrington Unit, just outside of Houston. Ironically, my birthplace is Huntsville, Texas, which is the central unit for the state prison system. I don't want to dwell on prison too long, but it has an interesting place in my life, as we weren't far from the actual Walls Unit, the primary unit in the state. I mean, I walked past it every morning going to church or to the grocery store or whatever. And I say all that to say, in Huntsville, there were two methods by which you were employed. It was either Sam Houston State University, which is the college university in the town, or Texas Department of Corrections. Having said that, I played ball in high school and college and had a pretty good career. But, you know, injuries visited, and so I had to live life for real. And at that time, in the mid-80s, I was, they were hiring. My study in school was sociology. And I thought what I would do is to try to make an impact in some way, but primarily I needed a job. So I started there, worked for a while, and, you know, things were what they were. I was single, you know, apartment, the car, the whole nine, kind of unfulfilled, but had no idea the direction my life would take. Until a friend, a very good friend of mine, asked me to take him, give him a ride to an audition at a what would be then a community theater, the Ensemble Theater in Houston. And as I was there sitting and waiting, the artistic director asked me if I would read for a role, and I did. I read for the role. My friend was there to read. He got another one, and 30-some-odd years later, I have a career. I was very green, but never been without courage. I had to go back and study, so I went back into school at Texas Southern University and studied and did some other work, some touring shows, and just kind of being committed, if you will, to learning and growing. So much of the time I was kind of thrown into the deep end of the pool and had to swim my way back. But I loved it, and I grew, and it changed my life. Subsequently, that's how I began my life in theater. And then I met August Wilson, and that changed everything, everything. And from that, that became my calling card nationally, internationally, and, you know, around the country, New York, UK, whatever. I grew, and I say it humbly, I grew and grew because I was very green. And even now, you know, we can all better our best. And I always feel like the next job is something to get better at or to learn more. And subsequently, that's how I got here. One job led to another, led to another. We think we can do everything, right? Every job, every script or piece of work we get, we think we can do. But I think survival in this business is part of the business. And I've been able to do that. And I'm very proud about what I've done. I hope there's more ahead of me. Having said that, I can look back on some of the friendships, some of the joys and pains, and the travel. For that matter, speaking with you, it is all the result of being resilient and having respect for what I do and knowing it is a journey. It is an absolute marathon, and you're going to see and meet people along the way. And I've been blessed. I'm a better man for having done so.
It's a remarkable thing about, I always think this in life, that when we are blessed to meet certain people, is it a case, I'm pretty convinced it's a case of fate, destiny, whatever you want to call it, that if you hadn't met the people that you had, you wouldn't be where you are today.
Oh, absolutely. But,
yeah. And I think this is the most remarkable thing in life, is that if something really is meant to be, you will be sent the right people for your life.
You know, discernment is really important because we are sent all types of people. And there is this, I don't know, it's kind of unfounded, but there is this thing that all of us in the arts, as it were, there's a huge dynamic. Either we are just, you know, as it's written, just poor players, you know, insignificant, disposable, whatever, or the other part of the world thinks we're really doing really, really well, right? And it's really odd because when it's good, it's really, really good. But oh my God, Miss, when it is bad, it is old damn, right? Having said that, in between those two polar opposites, we meet people. And I've said this before, and I say it with pride and also as a learning tool that I've used for years that I was told by my mentor, that we walk amongst the very thing and people that we study. They are our existence. They are who we are. That with that adage, you are what you eat. You are, by association, the people that you hang out with and spend time with. And I, at some point, I don't know what age or whatever, at some point the light came in. And at some point I grew up. At some point maturity visited, you know, and stayed. And I was able to realize I am searching for something. I have no idea what it was, but I had to stop. I had to be still. Again, per text of scripture, I had to be still and understand I am a contributor to my life. I am a contributor to the planet. And what I see, what I speak, what I do is what's coming back to me. I know things are out there. I know they're terrible. I know there's negativity. I know that racial stuff is cyclical, as is history. I get that. And it's not far from my thinking. But I choose to be a part of something. I have kids. They're adults now, 20 and 24. But I have children. And I chose not to live my life in negativity because that's what I'm feeding them. Mm. And so, yes, the people I've met, I am a product of all of them, whether I like it or not, whether I like them or not. But it's on me to make the choice whether I want to grow or want to dwell in some of those moments that have not been very positive or in my favor. You know, why not me? Right? Why not me at both ends? Why not me surviving whatever happened? Why not me learning from the problems that I have caused? I have not walked through this life as a pristine figure, but I'd like to say that I've learned, and I'd like to honor the memory of my family members and the people who saw value and worth in me and took time to give me direction. So, yeah, that everyone I meet, homeless or otherwise, to me means something. They mean something.
It's a beautiful thing what you say, Russell. And I really felt that because we are actually, although we are all individual beings and we're all individual people and hearts and souls, yet we are somehow intertwined with each other on a far deeper level. Mm-hmm. And what I loved about what you said is, you know, you are everyone who you meet, and whether that means whether you like them, whether you didn't like them, but they're actually there. Every single person, even you and I now, and everyone out there listening, and every single person, no one is insignificant. This is the most important thing, I think.
Boy, that's its own book, its own movie. Everyone has value. I saw a young man a few days ago. I was driving, and he was in the middle of the base, if you will, of Beverly Hills, and he was in the middle of the street, and he had on an old and, for lack of a better term, tattered suit. He was barefoot. He was dirty. I mean, his aesthetic appearance was clear. And he was pretending to tie a tie in the middle of the intersection. And the first thing I thought was, my God, is she looking for him? Is anyone looking for him? Does anybody care? In our homeless situation, LA is just horrendous. I don't know if it's like this anywhere else in the world. But I saw him, and most times you do what you've been taught. I was raised in the Methodist church, and I've grown, I've learned as an adult. I've become quote unquote worldly, so I have questions, but my questions are seeking answers to kind of move the needle forward. So when I see guys like him and others, I often wonder, you know, but for the grace, right?
Yes. Yeah.
We all, especially in my business, especially in this town, where there are such extremes of extreme wealth and extreme, I say poverty. There are places around the world that would make our worst days seem, you know, wonderful. But when I think of that, I think of how do we help and why do we move through our day as a country, as a city, as a government, and they just aren't in part of the machine, so we don't worry about them. It's like infants or really young people and very old people. They're not contributing to any degree. So, and they are kind of not spoken of. And I just say, I went off on that, forgive me, but I say all that to say everybody has value. Everyone has value. And I only imagine what his heart, what his mind was, what his mind was thinking, attempting to tie that tie in the middle of a busy intersection, talking to himself. And that's hard for me. I'm a very emotional guy, and that's hard for me just to not care about him and others. And so, yeah, as a response, very long response to your statement, we all have value. I see it, and given the opportunity, I think we can do things. We can do things.
It's something here, even in your answer, Russell, because here is this. Was it a man that was standing?
Yes.
Did he have a real tie, or was he pretending?
No. Didn't have a real tie and didn't have on a collared shirt. I don't know what the hell was going on, other than I saw him because he was facing me in the direction I was going in the middle of an intersection.
I wonder what his message was, because here we are now talking about him. You're telling me thousands of miles away, people are going to be listening about him, and everyone will have a different message about that man.
Wow. You're right.
Because I will now think, why was he doing that? What was he trying to say?
Wow. Yeah, what was he trying to say? Who was he saying it to?
And well, clearly to you as well.
Ooh, yeah, because again, he was facing me. I literally had to go around them, as did everyone else. To get, it was at San Vicente in Wilshire, which is a very, anyone who knows Los Angeles, it's a very busy intersection. And it makes you wonder, who was he 6 months ago?
Yeah. Right?
What is it about that tie? Because that's a very prominent and fluent area as well. But what was it about the imaginary tie that meant something? Did it mean success? Did it mean relevance? Was it, I don't know. I can't speak to his psyche or his emotions, but all I saw was a human. And I again, working in the prison, there were 1,701 inmates every single day, all men, primarily Black and Latino, of course, but they were scattered with some of everyone. But the big thing I learned after I was there is what a loss of manpower, what a loss of humanity, of leaders, of teachers, of fathers, of coaches, potential doctors, lawyers. Again, one mistake, or one, deliberate transgression. I don't know what it was, but there is something, there is value to everybody. And that young man, who I'm going to assume was somewhere between 30 and 40, I would lean more toward 30. I was struck by the fact that out here, they're getting younger and younger and younger. They're not all war veterans. They're not all old people who are destitute or whatever. I say old people respectfully. They're not. Some of them, this life, our politics, our society, our absolute of have and have not, win or lose with no middle class, no middle ground, has driven so many people to just give up. Of course, I don't know that young man's story, but I now have the imprint. I now have the impression, and that's kind of how I've lived my life. I will say I have not always been like that. I have a tremendous ego. It's not as big as my responsibilities, but it is there. when I was, there are times when vanity as a young man having any success in life, that visited me also. But there are people and things and experiences and travel, and my journey of faith, if you will, has been humbling. And now I see things in a way that I didn't see them as a young man. And I hope just my efforts, you know, I'm wanting to talk a lot. A lot of it is because I'm discovering, even now at my age, you know, what I've missed. And I'm proud to say that I've come full circle in that. But because of that, or were it not for that, I would not have seen that young man in the families I've sponsored and supported and the kids I've worked with over these last 40 years or so.
And it's poignant, Russell, that this young man was standing there putting his pretend tie in the middle of the road.
Right.
And you say it's an affluent area.
Oh, yeah. It's like your financial district.
What is he actually saying? I'm now going to think about this because it's an illusion. There are these people that go every day that are wealthy people.
Mm.
And they do their ties. But in the end, we are all human. And people look at people. They create labels for people. They put them into compartments, into boxes. Mm. But really, we are all the same. Ultimately, we are all connected. We are all united. And if you take the tie off, because the tie is also, in a way, a symbolism. It's really symbolism, like a noose.
Exactly. Great word. It is symbolism.
You know, and everywhere we look, every single day of our life, there is a sign.
You have to be ready. Forgive me. I didn't mean to say it like that. One has to be ready, though.
Yes.
To receive that sign.
Mm.
And know that it's a sign. I heard a sermon years ago. I won't deny, you know, my faith and my search and my journey, but I'm not the most religious person in the world. I do respect my upbringing and those. I was having this conversation last night. Those who are so committed to it, and I love it because it is inspiring and it's moving. But one thing that I have learned is that we are all one step away from truly, I won't say understanding, but at least coming to some balance that all of our questions will not be answered. And that's one thing I had to battle as a young man. I wanted an answer because we can answer this, we can answer that, we can do, but I wanted an answer. But I had to realize that I'm the answer. And even if temporarily, I'm the answer. And my answer is seeing that young man. And my answer is speaking to you. And I hope my contribution to this, this human conversation is that now the next person either sees him or someone like him, and they're able to, you know, you can't just reach out the window with $5 or $10 or a pound of weight. You can't do that all the time. But if we believe in our spirit that, again, but for the grace, if we believe in our spirit that our thoughts, our intentions are paid forward, that something we say, something we do, some illumination of that young man is paid forward, it's a beginning. And I don't know any other way to do it. It's so frustrating and disheartening. But who is he? What is he? What got him there? What can get him out of there? And here's one thing, I'll say this to you also, Ms. Novi, is I have learned by virtue of getting out of my car or off my bicycle and sitting at these parks and bus stops with these people who we just kind of see rambling and mumbling or whatever, I've stayed with them long enough at different points to understand they are musicians, they are parents, they are writers. I've had men and women to just burst out into song, and they it's beautiful. And I'm thinking, my God, where was his or her dream broken? Who said no to them? And was that no the final no? So I think like that, and I'm not unique, but it disheartens me, but it also inspires me. So I'm always kind of torn, but I cannot see them anymore the way I used to. And if there's any way I can contribute in word or deed, I'd rather live the rest of my days like that than the other.
That's so wonderful, really. And as you were talking, I was thinking to myself about this man and about everyone we meet. But because we're talking about him, what if the message was actually he was the message?
Ooh,
and
ooh, Mimi, ooh, yeah.
You understand? So what if he's the message? And maybe when you say, what can I do with all of the people that you help? I know that you do a lot of work for different people, but imagine if this person is the message for you, that if it inspires you to do something, then he has fulfilled his role.
Second time in 24 hours, I've heard that. Second
really?
Time, yes. Having a conversation last night, and my God, she spoke always so eloquently, in her faith and her understanding of it. Again, we were having one of these conversations of, you know what? I want, like everyone else, as much as I can get and whatever I deserve, but I also want that person under that tent, on that bus stop. I want him to have his or hers as well. And it was said to me that basically wanting that and seeing that person and being moved by them to do something, that may be their job.
Absolutely,
or their season or their contribution. Well, everyone's not going to look like us and want to do what we do, but if we are prepared, we'll see that sign. And I think you're absolutely right. That may have been the message. And I think that it is, given what you're saying to me and given the conversation last night and, again, this journey that I'm on, not for perfection but for balance, he is the quote-unquote messenger. But I have to quit being so doggone angry and understand.
This doesn't help. It doesn't help.
It doesn't. It
because
doesn't.
The anger is actually dissolves all love. Mm. And you have to think to yourself, I think to myself, I get annoyed sometimes at the total injustice of so many things. But in staying in that state of anger isn't helping us, isn't helping that person. And if we can look, and I really believe this, Russell, if we can look to every single person that we meet is an absolute reflection of something deep within us.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, how else would we recognize them? Of course.
Yeah. So what is that person saying? He has to exist like that. However sad and truly, truly sad it is, there's something higher on a I don't know how you feel about spirituality, but there's something high about his level that has allowed him to come onto this earth, to be as he is, to awaken compassion and love in another heart and in another soul.
Mimi, last night, I'm telling you as I breathe and talk to you, last night it was said to me that my thing was, but they're not happy, right? And what was shared with me is, but you don't know if they're happy or not. Their existence is beyond that which we can understand. So,
very true.
Saying to me that I'm not wrong for feeling the way I'm feeling, but don't just assume because he's out there with no tie pretending to tie one. Or there's another man we've seen over the years. We call him Statue Man because he's just dark from all the soot and whatever. He's already a dark-skinned black guy, but he sat so beautiful in a position at a bus stop, and he is now forever known as Statue Man. I say that to say we can't assume that they are unhappy in the way that we see happiness. They may know that they're the messenger, right?
Absolutely.
They may know that, and we have to get there. Yes, you're absolutely right. And I like that you said that because that's affirmation from a conversation I had last night.
It's not a coincidence that you're hearing it again. And what I was thinking actually also now, and what inspiration was coming to me, is how do you know that maybe he was actually, it's incredible, really, it's an incredible story. Because how do we know that he wasn't reminding you to stay free and not to tie this noose of a tie around your neck, not to be pulled by the material aspects or things that we are all pulled towards at times because we are also physical beings, but actually telling you to be free?
Mimi, what you just said, forgive me for saying Mimi, Miss Snowy.
No, Mimi, it's fine. Please don't call me by my first name.
What you said is so valid and so real and so needed. It's almost unfair because for every time I think that there's an obstacle, there is a sign. I heard a gentleman deliver a sermon for a friend passed some years ago. He's a very prominent figure. But Andrew Young was the minister, and he said, some people see the cross as an obstacle. Some see the cross as a sign. But whatever it is the power of the Spirit that allows us to act upon what we see. And what you just said about him knowing, what if he did know? And of course, in that intersection, hundreds of cars every 10, 15 minutes, hour, whatever. But if one person, and I want to be for this conversation that one person, if one person now takes that moment and shares it, I may never see him again, but I will, quote unquote, see him and others again. And I will share that story. And then I'll realize that, yes, he was the message. He was the sign. And he absolutely was there for a reason. And it's always been bigger than me, but I am humbled daily, but in particular at this moment, by, and I say this with all due respect and everything given in acknowledgement, when I say less than 24 hours, I was having this very conversation. And even though I was not combative, I always had, but what about, but what about, but what about? And here it is, the other halfway around the world, and the podcast, that the origins of it was a story about another young man that I met. And here it is, the substance of our conversation is unlimited. And it's not just a singular thing to that one man in the middle of an intersection, that there are people around the world who care, that there are people around the world who see and notice. And sometimes because we're out here trying to have and have and have, we forget what we have.
Yes.
We literally forget what we have. Happiness, I've learned, is wanting what you have. You can always have more. You can always have less. But if that which is in your hand, if that's a value to you, you see that guy in that intersection. You see that woman. You see those children. You see things around the world that we look at and say, oh, that's horrible, and change the channel. It means something. We don't have to dwell there. But that we care, we have to assume that that energy and that spirit is out there. That's all I have. That's all I have to give. But I think I can lay my head down at night knowing I've done that and shared that with my children. And that's my part. That's my contribution.
An intersection, is that a crossroads?
Yes, it's a huge one. Listen, it takes you from what we call mid-city, mm-hmm. going north into Beverly Hills. At that intersection, you go east and west.
And he was there in the middle of that?
Right in the middle of it. In the middle of it.
So what is he saying? To me, he's saying his message.
Oh, I know where you're going. I'm listening. Go ahead.
Right. Okay. So hear me out. Russell, listen. So what I'm hearing through you, because you are also the messenger here, you are part of the message.
Mm.
You are the voice of the messenger. So, for example, we are all standing at every moment of our life at a crossroads.
Absolutely. At the end of the day, I knew it. Oh, my God, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
And that is what we should keep in our mind, in our heart, in our soul, that at any one given moment, we can change our life. We can change someone else's life. That we have the power. We just have to believe.
I was prepared to... I thought, boy, what they say, you know, you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans.
Yes.
I thought I was prepared to talk and, you know, be spontaneous. I was not prepared for this, but one thing about truth, you don't have to search for it. It always is, and it's constant. And the truth is, as much as I'd like to challenge and prove me, show to me your existence, by virtue of last night's conversation, by virtue of where we are, which is not at all the way I thought this was going, but I am blessed. And my best friend, Stephen Henderson, said to me, the only person that can stop you from getting your blessings is you.
Yes.
Now, they may not be the way you want them, but you have to know what they are. And I laugh at the simplicity. When people say, hey, man, what's up? I say, hey, I woke up. How about that? I say that in jest, but I also say it because I feel like there's an opportunity. I don't know what it is. I'd be lying if I did. I'd be lying if I thought that opportunity was always going to fall in my favor. I don't think that. But I do know that I have the opportunity to be better than I was yesterday. And I can at least be true to who I say I am moving forward. Again, I'd rather walk in that existence than the other way I've been in the other existence, if you will. Confused, angry, self-destructive. I have to admit that. But it's when the light came on, it wasn't one day, it wasn't one moment, it wasn't some big spiritual epiphany, you know, the music, and it wasn't that. It was realizing that I have a place, I have a purpose in my contribution, my offering to the world on my children. And I like to think if I've done anything in my life that it's worthy and productive, it's been them. And that's all I have with that. And yes, he is the messenger. And yes, we all are every moment, every day at the intersection in our life, in our thoughts, in our choices. And yeah, that is.
Maybe there's something that you are at a crossroads with.
Okay, that's not fair. Oh man. Listen, everything that shines ain't gold. Okay. So I am truly at that point, and I am to a degree. Sometimes I feel beaten. I feel like I'm losing, but you know, wins and losses are all relative. My mom said to me years ago, one of the first times she saw me perform on stage, it was a very big production, and she was backstage, and she said to me, she always called me baby. Again, I said earlier, I'm the youngest boy of all the cousins in that world. And she said, baby, I love watching you perform, and you seem so happy, but just keep in mind that your life may not be performing. Your life may be what you do for others with your performance, with what you gain from your performances. So keep that in mind, enjoy it, love it, and grow in it. But no, there may be something else that comes from this. I've never, obviously, never forgotten that. And I was kind of hurt, Mimi, when she said that, and I was thinking, again, in my young vanity, Mom, I just gave a hell of a performance, standing ovations. And she knew that. But what she reminded me was, Russell, you've always been that. With your athletics and all the other things you've accomplished, you've always been that. So now figure out, and she said this, but it's not verbatim. Now figure out how to take those blessings and share them. And as I've gotten older, I realize I am. We never know who we're going to meet. We never know who we're talking to. My grandmother, again, I keep referring to the women in my family. My grandmother, baby, you never know who's watching you. You never do. And I've tried to live my life that way and not hold myself in such judgment. When I've made mistakes, whether they were by my own accord or just, you know, trying to do more in life.
What you have just said to me about your mom is actually what I was thinking, is that what if this is the next stage to your calling? What if the guy on the interstate has come to move something deep within you, to rekindle it, to enlighten something, to help you make a decision that you are on the verge of making.
I'm not unaware. First, I heard your question, and I agree with it. And I believe he is. I believe they all are, but in particular, in the most acute sense, I believe that. I think where I'm a little torn at this very moment is, what is it? What do I do? I don't want to file that in the social, emotional, spiritual library as an experience that I've seen. We've all had thousands, if not millions, of those. But your question now is the thing that I think a lot of us are afraid of. We've seen it. We want to do something, but sometimes we are afraid that we will fail at our attempt to do something about it. And we become part of that 80-some-odd% of our self-talk is so negative. And we talk ourselves out of things. Or, you know, we're so uncertain and afraid of public opinion. But I think you're absolutely correct. He, in his own way, his own existence, is saying to me and to all of us, how do we move forward? What do we say? Yeah. How do we act on this? Mm-hmm. And that decision that I have to make, there's a couple, and we all have something that's cooking. There's a couple, and I have to make them, and I have to make them out of a sound, balanced mind and not out of the anger.
Anything done in anger is regretful in the end, but everything done in love, you will never regret what you did for love or what you did in love. I have never regretted, Russell, anything that I've done for love.
Wow. Wow. Because, yeah, if it's out of love, that's your best. And how do you better that?
There's nothing better than love.
Nothing.
And it's because of your love for this soul that you saw on the interstate, the crossroads of life, in effect, that we all face. It is because of that that we are having this conversation now that is actually moving on so many different levels, that not only on the physical level, but we are all contemplating at any given moment our life. Is this what we want? What can we do? I'm angry about this. I'm upset. I'm happy about this. But actually, if we take all of that away, take all the barriers, take all the walls, take all the fears, our heart knows the answer.
Yes.
We will reach people more with love than with anger, than with fear, than with prejudice. It is with love.
Absolutely. I can't go further with that, because at the end of the day, we all want it. We all have so much and so little all at the same time. And where it, you know, you go east and west, north and south, looking for yourself, looking for love. And it's right there. It's where we are.
Yeah.
It is it's where we are, but it's so big. It's so wonderful, but it's so vivid and so clear that we think it's something else, and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
We think it is in the things that we can wear or drive or sit in or eat or go to, and all that's fun. Those are the fruits of your labor, but at the end of the day, what we all are looking for, it's love. And or at least having the courage to share it. I'm an old school cat from the South, you know, and showing emotions and, you know, being vulnerable was not the way I was raised. But that wasn't in my parents and uncles and cousins the way we grew up. They weren't trying to instill fear. They were trying to instill integrity, courage, you know, self-respect, dignity, all the things that you hope that you ultimately are. But it was done as a reactionary thing to the times, what was going on in the South at the time. And I speak of my days, hell, 20 years earlier, it was even worse. And, you know, so, but relatively speaking, to be able to love and to allow yourself to be loved, it's a big thing. It's a very adult, very mature and human thing to accept things and to give without restrictions. I hope I'm in that space. I hope I stay in that space. And again, by word or deed, I want to matter because people and things matter to me.
You can never in life, I think, lose, because you said about winning and losing, and we're all winning and losing in any given moment. Mm-hmm. And we hope that the winning is more than the losing. But in actual fact, when you look at it, there is no winning and losing. It just is. It's our perception.
Mm. Yeah.
And I suppose the only thing that we can lose is that belief in ourself, because if we have lost that, we have lost everything.
Everything. This interview came to me over a week ago, having no idea how desperately, unknowingly, of course, how desperately I needed to hear it and to have it. And again, in this past 24 hours, it's been so enlightening. It's been every aspect or tentacle of emotion. But it all comes back to, I'd like to think my learning, painful or not, is because I care. And I care because I love, and I think I can take away from this and move forward with the fact that I'm okay with that. And whatever happens, and whatever decisions I make, it'll be inclusive, but ultimately out of love that I will make all those decisions.
You know, Russell, I was, you know, like you do, you talk to yourself and you talk to your heart. And the other day I was having a conversation and it just happened like that. And the subject was with a friend of mine and we were talking about fear. And I said, well, yeah, I have to admit there are some things that I'm afraid of. And then she said to me, well, are you really afraid of them? Or is it that you're afraid of the consequences of actually not following your heart?
Mm.
And I thought, exactly. That's actually the fear in all of us, is that we will do something wrong. But wrong for who? not wrong for the world, wrong for our own conscience.
Yes. Yes. For whom? My goodness. My goodness. Yeah.
But if we allow our heart to love, and as you said earlier, to be loved, because this is also an important factor, and connect with people in a loving way. And people always say to me, oh, you've got rose-colored glasses on.
No.
I really don't care, because that is what I love about people. Here we are. You are so far away in the physical world, but we have connected, even with your interstate man, on another level where it's teaching us so much. And that is through our love of humanity.
And love is not without struggle or effort. It is not. Matter of fact, it's because of that struggle and needed effort that we love more. And again, it does sound like the typical cliche. It does give the appearance of the rose-colored lenses. But you know what? Love takes courage. Oh my God, it takes courage. And it's not the intimate love that's so readily available in our minds. It is, again, that person has a purpose, and that we want for others the same thing we want for ourselves. And if we can't even just stop for a moment and say that to ourselves, I don't know why we're here. I don't know what we're doing, because again, you can't help everybody, but you can help yourself by acknowledging them, thus helping others. And that's where I was raised. Lord knows, I got away from it. And I came back. And I came back not out of pain or hurt. I came back because it felt better, because it was a better existence. And I realized some of those things that I thought was the end of the world, I look back, they were end of that world. They were the end of that moment, right? But I am happy and I'm fortunate to be able to recognize that. And, you know, I'm proud to say, again, I'm a better man for having recognized those things.
I think you're very blessed, Russell, and you are very fortunate that you have this perception and this deeper perception that takes also a huge amount of courage, because we all want to somehow avoid some truths. But you have the courage to look at them and to try to understand them. And therein is part of your vocation in life, shining the light.
I will accept that, and I won't touch it, because those words are indeed a gift in themselves, and I'll let that rest right there, because I'm grateful that you said that and that you saw that. That means a lot, as I sit there and expose my inner thoughts and feelings and emotions, you know, to the world, as it were, you know. But it means something. And again, I can take that to my pillow at night, that means something. And I thank you for that.
Thank you, Russell. Thank you, because what you have shared tonight has been incredibly beautiful, incredibly deep, and it's something I never know where a talk is going to go, on a podcast, in the street, wherever. I never know. And it is that funny thing of we plan and God loves, absolutely. And this is the wonderful thing about being human, is that we meet each other at the place that we are in that moment in time.
Wow, that's the intersection. Yes.
Yes.
That's the intersection. Wow. Who knew?
Absolutely. Who knew? And I don't want to, you know, as you said, we could write a whole book about this, but I know that I want to quickly, before we end, go on to your book and tell us a little bit about your book.
Yeah, I know we've spent a lot of time growing. Shoes is a book about 11-year-old black boy in Houston that I actually met yet never spoke to. It was a Salvation Army, Salvation Army, which is a resale shop or situation here in the country. And I always go, I like old hats and, you know, and jackets and whatever, you know, kind of secondhand things. I've said before, it's not foreign to my upbringing. Our life was okay, but there are moments, and very vivid and clear moments, that was part of our daily walk. And I just happened to be in one when I saw this family come in, and two younger children, you know, I guess 5, 6 or whatever, a mom who was clearly a domestic, and the young boy whose name is Junior in the book. And the reason he's Junior is that's all I heard his mom and the kids call him. I don't know his name. I don't know the mother's name. The kids said Mama, which is very Southern, but very familiar in our culture. And those are the only names that I knew. And I watched them kind of navigate being in the store, in this quote unquote, this young man child, being who he was to his younger siblings, who had the utmost respect for him, and the respect that the mom gave him in the room to, hey, watch the kids while I'm doing and shopping or whatever. And keep in mind, Mimi, they're shopping in a resale, hand-me-down situation, but to them, they didn't see it like that. It was your Harrods. It was our Macy's. It was them, but they were there for a particular day. The mom was getting married the following day, and they were shopping, and I'm eavesdropping. I'm a boy. I'm listening to these stories, and I feel kind of odd walking around this Salvation Army trying to hear this story. But I was so engaged. I was so enraptured. I had to know. And when I heard the young boy tell an old man at the shoe rack why he was so interested in these old, what we call Chucks, Converse, canvas sneakers, is because he's never owned a pair, because he wears corrective boots because of a fire. And the fire, his father was killed and his legs were burned. And again, I'm hearing all of this and I'm wondering, oh my God, I obviously am here today to hear this story. And it was 38 years ago. I met that family 38 years ago, but I've never forgotten them.
Imagine that. That's never. Incredible. What a mark on your
and
being.
I felt like I don't want to write this for any monetary gain. I just didn't want to forget the boy who, when I saw walk in the store with his family, I saw myself. And I said, oh my goodness. And I had to know. Right now, Junior, as it were, would be in his 40s. This was 38 years ago. We never spoke. I never saw him again when they left. But again, in the book, and I'd like to, if you don't mind, I'll send you a digital copy so you can read if you have the time.
Yes, please. Absolutely. And is the book just about him?
No, it's about the fact. What happened that moment in the store, mm-hmm. was alone that moment. But to write the book, I had, how do I make a book of this? So I had to figure out, how do I get them to the store? I worked backwards and added elements of my life, all fact-based. I took moments and made a day of the book, right? But with segments of my life, my mom was a domestic. She and my grandmother worked for the same family until that family sent my mom, or helped my mom rather, go to nursing school, which did something, of course, for our life. So that's in there. Some of the POV of Junior in his neighborhood, the village of people, and why he's called Shoes, the guys that he saw growing up in the park and whatever, they would tease him respectfully, calling him Shoes because he always had those black boots and those sneakers like the guys that, you know, he had money. It's not about basketball. It's not necessarily about those sneakers. It's about the young boy and his journey. And that just happens to be a catalyst for the story. There's a lot more, but Junior is, he is, I won't say the star, but he is an unforgettable figure. I pray that he is doing well. I hope by some miraculous intersection, if you will, his kids are able to see the book, not knowing who I am, not knowing that their father is the reason for it, but just knowing that the young man I saw in that store with all that dignity, all that responsibility, but all that life, that he meant enough to me here 38 years later, I put his world on what I thought it would be in a book.
What a remarkable story.
It's interesting. I almost didn't do it because I was thinking, who would believe it? Who would believe that I saw this happen and didn't forget it? And then as I went back to add elements, it's a chapter book. And it's for children / young readers. Mm-hmm. And who would believe? And then as I went back and looked, I said, my God, who would believe my own life? You know, we all have stories, and I just kind of shared mine.
I think it's wonderful that you've done that, because I'm already enthralled by it, and I want to know more about the family, because you've made it so familiar now. I think it's, what a wonderful thing to do, and what a remarkable thing that it has been imprinted and has become part of you in a way, so much so that you, after all these years, are now, you have this book that you've written about this one moment in time that profoundly, in a way, changed you.
Well, it did. It did. It did. And again, I'm better for the experience, and you know, of course, I have all the dreams and hopes and aspirations, but what Junior has already given me is far more than I thought I'd ever get from that moment.
Beautiful. And where is the book available, Russell?
We can start with. It's online, Amazon.com, Bookshop.com, BarnesandNoble.com. But let's do this. The website, if you will, my website is arussellandrews.com. And it will open and you will see Shoes. To go directly to it would be arussellandrews.com/shoes. It shows you outlets. It gives you a bio and detail, a little video of, and what I've done in terms of the marketing. But there you will find the ability to purchase the book.
And for anyone also who's interested in your wonderful career that you have, which we have, you've got to come back again so that we can talk about that
Listen, I would do it immediately. Thank you for the invite. Yes, I will.
Oh, it's a pleasure. They can come to your website, can't they, and have a look, or even just tap your name into Google.
Yes, it's there.
Okay. What can I say? It is one of those profound moments, Russell, where I'm smiling, I'm thoughtful, and I'm truly blessed and grateful that you have joined me here today and shared a moment of such precious, precious memories and precious moments of your life with me.
Thank you so much. I'm honored, and I think I've learned, you know, sometimes we need to get it out of us to really learn, and I've learned even more about myself and you and what your contribution is. I can only imagine what people have to say about your offering, your production, and what have you. It is way more than I thought. And again, I'm happy to have been a part of it.
Ah, thank you for the honor, and thank you for standing on the intersection of dreams.
Thank you.
Look after yourself and come back again anytime, and we will talk much more.
Thank you so much, Mimi.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. A. Russell Andrews, absolutely fantastic. What an amazing thing it is that we are so connected, even across the world, to so many people, even if we have never even met them. Human nature is so beautiful. Thank you so much for joining me today and for listening to my wonderful, wonderful guests. Until next time, look after yourselves and lots of love.
Thank you for listening to Secrets for an Inspirational Life, brought to you by your host, Mimi Novick. Please remember to subscribe to the podcast and see you in the next episode. For more information about Mimi Novick and her books, music, and inspirational work, take a look at her website, www.miminovick.co.uk.